Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 8 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Listener caution is advised, as this episode contains adult themes and descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. Stephen Farrow was born in 1964. He was the black sheep of the family. The product of an unplanned pregnancy, his mother Doreen and father Reg raised Stephen, along with his five siblings, in Dorley, Shropshire. Stephen was idolised by his mother, who never had a bad word to say about him, but in stark contrast, Stephen hated his father for being the harsh disciplinarian. His mother recalls life with Stephen as difficult, and understood there to be something very wrong with their son as a child. As a young boy, he was uncontrollable, hyperactive, and subject to angry outbursts. Stephen was expelled on his first day of school, and after that, his behaviour escalated. He would set alight rags and pass them through the letterboxes of his elderly neighbours, and in one incident, Stephen somehow managed to gain possession of an air rifle and shoot dead a swan. Stephen later claimed his disdain for animals extended to killing other people's pets, when in his own words, they did his head in. Due to his troubles, Stephen was sent to Nash Court, a residential school in Shropshire which catered for disruptive children. He spent 2 years at the school before his father was convinced by his wife that Stephen should be allowed home. In 1979, Stephen's brother Derek was tragically killed in a car accident which badly affected him, and that same year, aged only 15, he was arrested for burglary. Not 3 years later, he was taken into custody, this time for arson, and placed on probation. He found it difficult to hold down a job, and when he was nearly 20, he was handed a suspended sentence for theft and deception, but would end up in prison a year later for burglary. This custodial sentence did little to curb his behaviour, and Stephen was again convicted of burglary at Liverpool Crown Court, receiving a further 4 years in prison. He told a psychiatrist that he had been abused as a child by priests at his school, and in retaliation he declared war on Christianity. He explained he was 10 years old when he set fire to a church altar and stood to watch it burn. After being released, he ended up travelling the country, sleeping rough and carrying his belongings in a rucksack. Despite his hatred of the church, he would often rely on their charitable services helping the homeless. those seeking refuge would be scared of this erratic 6-foot-4-inch drifter, with newcomers often advised to keep a safe distance from him. When he wasn't around, Stephen was always the topic of conversation amongst the residents. In 1994, when Stephen was 30 years old and staying with his uncle as part of a home leave scheme from an earlier conviction, he was again arrested for aggravated burglary. The owner of the home was 77-year-old Stella Crowe, who lived in the property with her dogs and a lodger in Stourbridge, West Midlands. In her statement to police, Stella said she opened her front door to a man in his 20s who initially said he was meeting someone at the property. He then followed her into the home where he produced a knife with a 12-inch blade. In her statement, Stella said he asked for money and jewellery. Then he said if anyone came in, he would kill the dogs and me. He said, "I've killed before." He was holding the knife above my head in a stabbing stance, leaving Stella Crowe with two black eyes, a missing tooth and slashed hands. He fled the scene with just a jar of change worth £26. Stephen was later identified and arrested. During the trial at Stafford Crown Court, Stephen took to the stand and acknowledged he had a very dark side but wanted treatment. He was found guilty and sentenced to 8 years in prison in October 1995. Stella Crowe's son Alistair told the press, "Farrow gave my mother a beating." He added, "I don't think he should ever have been at liberty in the first place. He should have been in prison, not out on leave. But the fact he was then released, despite it being recorded that he had psychopathic tendencies, seems incredible." Following Stephen's conviction for aggravated burglary, Dr. Michael Bond, a forensic psychiatrist, interviewed Stephen and was told he was unable to form any meaningful relationships. Stephen also divulged that he had developed violent sexual fantasies which involved raping young girls. Further fantasies included breaking into homes of old women, tying up their husbands, raping the woman in front of them, then killing them both. In his assessment, Dr. Michael Bond thought Stephen Farrow was an extremely dangerous individual who had a psychopathic disorder. If Stephen's account of his fantasies was to be believed, he said it might not be long before he committed a series of offences against the occupants of a home. Another psychiatrist, based at Ashworth, a high-security psychiatric hospital in Merseyside, examined Stephen after his initial assessment by Dr. Bond. Questions were being asked. As Stephen was diagnosed with a psychopathic disorder, would his sentence be better served in an ordinary prison, or would it be more beneficial to see him treated in a hospital environment? Stephen told the second psychiatrist he had wanted to kill from his early teens, and he claimed to have attacked two boys during this period. He also claimed he had killed a backpacker 5 years prior in Devon when he was 25. The authorities cross-referenced this against similar crimes committed at that time. However, no murder could be found that correlated with Stephen's claims, so this was chalked down to another one of his fantasies. It was also noted that Stephen felt anger and resentment towards his whole family, as he believed they had rejected him when he was put in boarding school and later when he was homeless. The psychiatrist believed Stephen to be either embellishing or seriously seeking help for violent sexual thoughts. He agreed with Dr. Bond's initial diagnosis of a psychopathic disorder. Stephen Farrow would be released in 2000. It was Christmas in the market town of Thornbury, South Gloucestershire. Margaret Pinder and her husband had gone away for the holiday period, leaving their home empty from December 21, 2011 to January 2, 2012. On their return, they discovered their cottage had been ransacked. Their belongings were strewn across the floor, and cash, jewellery and a radio were stolen, along with a trail of half-eaten food left throughout the house. As they went to look in the kitchen, they found a disturbing note that had been pinned to a wooden table with two knives. It was written in red ink in uppercase letters. The writing was wobbly and uneven, like it had been disguised or possibly penned with a non-dominant hand. It read, "Be thankful you didn't come back, or we would have killed you, Christian scum. I fucking hate God." The reference to Christians confused the Pinders, as neither of them practiced religion. They believe the only thing in the house that could have pointed to them being religious was a magazine in the toilet with the headline, "Is God Green?" But it was an environmental publication. The Pinders called the police and fingerprint evidence was taken. They had been lucky to be away from home when Stephen Farrow paid a visit. Sadly, 77-year-old Betty Yates would not have the same luck. Birmingham-born Betty Yates lived in Bewdley, located in the Worcestershire countryside. Betty had lived alone in a secluded white cottage, surrounded by green fields, since her husband had passed away 7 years earlier. She had two children, David and Hazel, who had long since left home and now had children of their own. Betty was active and well-liked in the community. She was very social and hosted book readings at her home. She was also physically active, being a keen swimmer, and had worked as an art teacher at St John's Middle School in Kidderminster up until her retirement in 1999. Her students were very fond of her, so much so many kept in touch throughout the years. One pupil recalls, "Teaching wasn't just her job, and we weren't just her pupils. She had respect, and although I provoked many an argument, she had the knack of sorting me out without yelling. The last time I saw Betty, in November last year, we drank tea and ate cake at a quaint little tea shop in Bewdley. On the short walk to the tea room, Betty must have stopped at least 5 times to greet people in the street and have a friendly chat. She was a wise lady, a natural mother, and I felt honoured that she would give me her time, that she would send encouraging notes and phone me up to see what and how I was doing."
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On January 2nd, 2012, Betty was in her secluded countryside home alone when she received a visit from Stephen Farrow. It's not known precisely what happened next, but Betty was forcibly struck with a walking stick. Once incapacitated, her head was rested on a cushion. Defenseless, she was then stabbed 4 times in the head and neck. Stephen left the knife protruding from one of the wounds and fled the scene. 2 days later, Betty's friend Paul Noons drove to her home. The pair had planned to meet, but after knocking on Betty's front door, he received no answer. He phoned the police, who visited the home, only to discover her lifeless body lying on the floor at the foot of the stairs. Fueled by his hate for Christians, Stephen Farrow travelled to Canterbury in February with the intention of killing Archbishop Rowan Williams. But when he arrived, he scrapped the idea when he saw the level of security that surrounded the building. He changed his plans and returned to Thornbury in Gloucestershire almost 200 miles away, returning to the village where he committed the burglary at the Pinders' cottage. John Suddards had been the reverend at the parish of St Mary's in Thornbury only 6 months, having previously worked in Essex. The 59-year-old former barrister had taken the job as a quiet post before retirement to be near his extended family in Dorset. He saw it as his Christian duty to open the door of the vicarage to vulnerable strangers that passed through the church and offer them shelter and support. This meant that the vicarage was open all hours, even when the church itself was locked. On Valentine's Day 2012, Reverend John Suddard's body was found in the vicarage by a parishioner and two workmen. Plumber Richard Goff and builder Carl Hardman had arranged to do some work on the vicarage, but when they failed to get an answer, Secretary for the Church Tim Giles came with a spare key to let them in. Carl Hardman and Richard Goff waited outside while Tim went inside the property. As he entered the home, the hallway was dimly lit and all of the curtains had been drawn. The floor was covered in blood and a large kitchen knife had been left next to the lifeless body of the Reverend. The authorities were notified immediately. The scene had been staged. Items had been placed on and around the Reverend's body, including a Bible open to the letter of Jude on his chest, a men's magazine, a condom packet, pornographic DVDs and underwear. A calendar open to the picture of a semi-naked male model was also arranged on his crotch. Objects within the home had been moved, and a canvas picture of Jesus Christ on the cross had been positioned with a mirror to reflect the image across the Reverend's body. Party poppers were also found strewn throughout the hallway. Stephen Farrow had spent the night in the vicarage. He drank the Reverend's beer while watching an Indiana Jones DVD, and before he left, he stole Reverend Suddard's mobile phone and used it to text friends of the vicar, "R.I.P. Mr. Suddards." That very night, an arrest was made. A member of the public had reported a suspicious man in his 40s hanging around the church in the days leading up to the murder. A white Citroen van was seized and a 43-year-old male was arrested. The suspect had been sleeping in the van belonging to a man called John Dean while John was on holiday in Malta for a few weeks. John was aware the man, known simply as Robbie, was a vagrant after meeting him through his Baptist church and wanted to help. He offered him employment as a litter picker at a caravan site he owned in Cornwall, and in exchange he could pitch his tent for free. Robbie was also offered to stay at an annex with John in Thornbury. While John was away, he told Robbie he could stay in his van. John spoke to police from Malta and informed them Robbie is a gentle, meek, mild-mannered man. The police had unfortunately arrested the wrong person. While the police were busy processing their initial suspect, Stephen Farrow began sending texts to Kai Rosell, a woman he'd met in spring 2011 at an evangelical church in Bridport, where she had gone to be a volunteer for the homeless. Their relationship was purely platonic, but she was aware Stephen felt differently, as he would orchestrate meetings at the church just to be alone with her. After receiving the alarming messages, she was petrified and immediately contacted the police. That's when Stephen Farrow came under police radar. The text read, "So as you reject me, you will suffer. I will be just around the corner, and you will never know when I will be there. I've already started my work and won't stop until I'm caught. You don't and never knew how disturbed I am. You will soon know the truth, and the church will be the first to suffer, and I don't lie about what is about to happen." A national appeal was launched to find Stephen Farrow. Due to Stephen's nomadic lifestyle, he was difficult to track, so on February 18, 2012, Detective Chief Inspector Simon Crisp of the Avon and Somerset Police appealed to the public for information. He stated, "We need the public's help with this. We do not know where he is. However, he's a dangerous man, and under no circumstances should he be approached." On Sunday, February 19th, after an anonymous tip-off from a member of the public, Stephen Farrow was located in Folkestone, Kent, and was arrested without incident at a property on Black Bull Road at 4:20 a.m. When officers removed Stephen's clothes for forensic testing, he said, "There is no way you will find anything on me. I just want to find out what you think I have done. I am buzzing off this." A few days later, Stephen Farrow was charged with the murders of Betty Yates and John Suddards, and Robbie, the initial suspect, was released without charge. DCI Simon Crisp, the detective leading the investigation, told the press that Stephen Farrow would have murdered more people if he had been caught.
Stephen Farrow is a sadistic and a remorseless killer. He is a homeless person, he's a drifter, with no ties to any particular area of the country. At the scene of his crimes, he left precious few clues, actually, despite the nature of those crimes. But within 2 days of us identifying him as a suspect, we also recognised the need to arrest him very quickly. And we had substantial grounds to believe he was going to carry on committing offences until he was arrested.
On March 7th, police recovered a large rucksack owned by Stephen from a barn near Beachy Head in Eastbourne. And the following day, on March 8th, they discovered other items in the remnants of a fire there which belonged to the Pinders. He had sold the stolen items of their jewellery to a jeweller in Kidderminster. While in custody, Stephen Farrow made one admission to a mental health nurse, Richard Evans, who he had been assessed by many years before, regarding the murder of Betty Yates. He said he had not killed the person, assumed to mean Betty, on January 1st because this was a Sunday, but he had killed her the following day. He went on to tell the nurse about how he thought 2012 to be significant. He believed the year would mark the start of the second coming of Christ.
Under tight security, Stephen Farrow arrived at court to hear the prosecution's case against him. The 48-year-old of no fixed abode faces two counts of murder. In February, the Reverend John Suddards was found dead at his vicarage in South Gloucestershire, lying in a pool of blood. He'd been stabbed in the chest and heart. Stephen Farrow is also accused of murdering Betty Yates, a 77-year-old widow who lived in a remote cottage at Bewdley in Worcestershire. She was beaten with her own walking stick and stabbed in the neck. The defendant denies both murders, and the trial's expected to last 6 weeks.
Opening the case at Bristol Crown Court on October 4th, 2012, Prosecutor Michael Fitton QC told the jury of eight men and four women, Stephen Farrow of no fixed address, admitted to a charge of burglary. He also admitted to the manslaughter of John Suddards on the grounds of diminished responsibility, but denied his murder. He denied stabbing Betty Yates. A consultant forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Tim Rogers, told the jury it was not possible to be sure when Stephen was telling the truth and when he was lying, but said that after assessing Stephen on two separate occasions and reading compiled reports spanning several years, he passed the threshold of psychopathy. He said that even if Stephen were trying to manipulate him, his diagnosis of psychopathy would still stand. The psychiatrist told the jury Stephen lacked empathy and the ability to pay regards to others' feelings in the usual way. Stephen failed to accept responsibility for his actions, and when giving an account of killing John Suddards to Dr. Rogers, he said, "The system has always underestimated and ignored me, and now someone has lost their life." Dr. Rogers went on to tell the court that there were 20 traits of a psychopath, each being given a score of up to 2, and Stephen scored 31 out of 40. Michael Fitton QC highlighted DNA linking Stephen to the murders, alongside further forensic support that the footwear worn by Stephen at the time of his arrest in February connected him to all three cases. The defence explained that DNA was present on Betty as Stephen met her on December 30th and the two hugged. The prosecution countered that Stephen's DNA would have been removed as soon as Betty Yates would have washed. Despite a jury request to attend, Stephen simply refused to leave his cell for most parts of the trial, and after all the evidence was presented, the jury retired to consider its verdict. On November 2nd, 2012, Stephen Farrow was convicted of the murders of John Suddards and Betty Yates. The jury was unanimous in finding Stephen guilty of John Suddards' murder and found him guilty of murdering Betty Yates by an 11-1 majority. The judge, Mr. Justice Field, said Stephen should spend the rest of his life behind bars and stated, "The Reverend told you he would die, and you repeated, 'Fucking die then, hurry up and die.' You watched him die as life seeped out of him in the next 3 minutes. You then ransacked and placed some highly personal items around him. I am quite sure you did that to humiliate the Reverend and desecrate his memory. I am quite sure you realised you would humiliate his family and the parishioners and the congregation of the church. In each of these dreadful, horrific killings, you acted sadistically to put a knife deep into the body of Betty Yates as she lay helpless on the floor." Stephen Farrow was sentenced to a whole life order. Betty Yates's two children, Hazel and David, spoke to the press outside the courtroom.
"We should all be relieved and thankful that Stephen Farrow is off the streets of Britain today. It is clear from his own words that had he not been caught, he would have continued to kill others and leave more misery in his wake. We have seen at first hand the complexity of this murder inquiry, and we want to thank the police and everyone involved for their tireless work, their attention to detail, and their consideration throughout this process. In this most difficult of times, you rely on your friends and family, and we thank all of you for your help and good wishes over the past months.
For our mother, there is now some public justice, but our personal loss remains raw and will continue. For us, it is important that our mom does not become defined by the brutality of her death, but is celebrated for the 77 years of her life. She will be remembered by her family, friends, colleagues and pupils as a woman who was kind, determined and above all good fun. We are not in denial about the circumstances of her death, but we can and do choose to concentrate on the joy she gave in life. To do otherwise would be a betrayal."
John Suddard's sister, Hilary Bosworth, also made a statement where she thanked those involved in the arrest of Stephen Farrow.
"Today we have reached the end of the trial of Stephen Farrow. The verdict is, in my view, a just one, which reflects the gravity of the situation. My brother John was a good man who dedicated his life to serving God and helping other people. He was a much-loved uncle to my three children and a dear friend to many, and he's greatly missed. In the 9 months since John died, we've experienced all the grief of losing a loved one, but we have also had to come to terms with the fact that John's life was taken in a very violent and totally unprovoked attack in his own home. Thankfully, for all concerned, only 6 days after the offence, Stephen Farrow was arrested. This brilliant piece of police work was largely down to Detective Chief Inspector Simon Crisp and his team at Avon and Somerset Police, without whose clear and quick thinking, courage and dedication to the task, Farrow may not have been apprehended. I would like to take this opportunity to thank him and all those involved for their determination to get justice for John."
Hilary Bosworth thanked the Crown Prosecution Service and the family liaison officer, Detective Constable Peter Fowler, before raising her concerns around Stephen Farrow's initial release.
"Like many other tragic events, the shocking events, deaths of John and Betty Yates raise many questions. How might things have been different? What could have been done to avert these tragedies? Do we, as a country, do enough to ensure that psychopaths with a known history of violence and criminal offences are not left roaming around at large, ready to attack someone? Do we perhaps as a society need to think again about how we might better monitor those people in our communities who present a real risk to society? These are not questions for us here today, but they do, in my view, merit some serious consideration. For now, I would like to thank you."
Bishop of Gloucester, Reverend Michael Purnham, and the Bishop of Tewkesbury, Reverend John Went, issued a joint statement after the conviction and sentencing of Stephen Farrow. "As a diocese, we are pleased that the trial of Stephen Farrow is over and a sentence has been reached. Recent months have been an immensely hard and painful time, both for John Suddard's family and also the parishes of Thornbury and Albury-on-Severn, where John had been a vicar for such a short time but had already come to be much loved. The end of the trial and the sentencing means family and parishes can now move on, though of course still with a great sense of loss. As a diocese, we shall continue to provide ongoing support for those who have been through this immensely painful time and hold them in our prayers. So where are we now? Stephen Farrow appealed his whole life sentence. He appealed because he believed his sentence, which included no possibility of parole, was in breach of Article 3 of the European Convention on Human Rights, citing incarceration until death was inhumane or degrading treatment or punishment. In January 2017, the Court of European Human Rights ruled that the punishment of a whole life order was just for Stephen's crimes, and his bid was rejected, meaning Stephen Farrow will die in prison. The decision was welcomed by Justice Secretary Liz Truss, who said it is right that those who commit the most heinous crimes spend the rest of their lives behind bars. It is also wholly right that judges can hand down whole life sentences to the very worst offenders in our society. Around 500 people filled St Mary's Church for John Suddard's funeral, which was led by the Bishop of Gloucester, Reverend Michael Purnham. Paying tribute to John, the Archdeacon of Gloucester, Geoffrey Sidaway, described how the vicar used to light a lamp each night to signal to parishioners that he was there for them if they needed him. He said, "We now know that made him very vulnerable. John was a lovely man. He was a kind man, a generous man." A candlelit vigil was held soon after Betty Yeats's death, and hundreds of friends, family and well-wishers paid their respects at her funeral. She continues to be missed, and a Facebook group, RIP Betty Yeats, was set up a year after her death by her former pupils. One post reads, "A year on, you are still greatly missed, Betty. You lit up so many lives, and you are our brightest star." Thank you for listening. For more information, please visit theywalkamonguspodcast.com. If you would like to support the podcast and receive ad-free content and other extras, please head to patreon.com/theywalkamongus. This week's podcast recommendation is Canadian True Crime. Host Christy Lee, an Australian true crime fanatic, tells Canadian stories of cruel people who committed heinous acts and honours innocent victims who are no longer with us. Stick around for a trailer at the end of this episode. We've set up a Facebook group where you can discuss the cases featured in the show, your favourite podcasts, or anything in between. Just head over to Facebook and search for They Walk Among Us podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at @TWAU_podcast or follow us on Instagram under They Walk Among Us podcast.
Hi, this is Christy Lee, host of the Canadian True Crime Podcast. My podcast tells Canadian stories of cruel people who committed heinous acts and honours innocent victims who are no longer with us. I start with a deep dive into the story of Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka, with information you probably haven't heard, and then I venture into some lesser-known Canadian crime stories. You can find me on your favourite podcast app. Just search for Canadian True Crime.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.